Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to this lovely forum wherein we spend our time, we spend our mind, we spend our heart, we spend our energies contemplating on the beautiful pearls of wisdom that Bhagwan has so graciously conferred on us. If you have been following the birthday celebrations which just concluded on November 20th, 2019 in the Sai Kulwant Hall, there was a program highlighting the significance, the importance and the necessity for each one of us to read the Vahinis and to make our lives the way Vahinis direct us. Sri Satya Sai Vahini Swadhyaya is an initiative of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organizations India to guide every person on the march towards permanent happiness. In fact, more and more we find people now spending their energies, immersing themselves in his message, in their quest to find the master. Ultimately, the master is synonymous with his message. And once the form is not easily accessible, the only way to experience the master is through mastering his message. And that is what you see unfold in so many hearts and minds who have been touched by Bhagwan's love. And the birthday celebrations, 2019, was a major leap in this movement. We are very grateful to Swami at Radio Sai. Because of his immense grace, we have had the opportunity to week after week read the Vahinis, soak ourselves in the nectar that is soaked in every word of Bhagwan. And as we taste this nectar, ensure that no test in our life becomes tasteless, because every test becomes a testimony of his love. So we are in Sandhya Nivarini, chapter 7. In the earlier episode, we started with first segment of Sandhya Nivarini. Bhagwan started delineating various principles, simple yet profound, that he expects from a devotee. Today we move on with this discussion. We will listen to what Bhagwan has written as the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th points in this beautiful list of what he expects from his devotees. In fact, I'll play for you all the points that Bhagwan has mentioned from point number 4 to point number 14, but I'm not sure how many points can we really discuss today in depth. We will pray to him and see how he guides the discussion. By his grace, we have today, along with Brother K.M. Ganesh and Brother Bhargav, also Brother Abhimanyu Kaul, a very senior student of Bhagwan's university, who has had the opportunity to not only watch him at very close quarters, but also experience him in far corners of the world. Seeing Swami in Prashanthi Nilayam is one beautiful facet of his love, but seeing Swami miles away from Prashanthi Nilayam is another sweet aspect of his love. We are fortunate that he is with us today, offering our gratitude to Swami for this yet another opportunity to fill ourselves with his message. Let's listen to the second segment of chapter 7.
For among all forms of love, man's first endeavor should be to love the Lord the most. 5. Such love towards the divine is bhakti. That is the duty of one's life. 6. Those who seek the bliss of the Atma should not go after the pleasures of the senses. 7. Treat truth as the life breath of man. 8. Just as the body that has no breath is useless and begins to rot and stink within a few minutes, similarly, life without truth is useless and tossed in the turbulence of strife and grief. 9. Believe strongly that there is nothing greater, nothing more precious, nothing sweeter, and nothing more lasting than truth. 10. Truth is the all-protecting God. There is no mightier protector than truth. 11. The Lord, who is the embodiment of truth, manifests to those who are truthful in speech and having a loving heart. 12. The spirit of self-sacrifice is at the heart of all-encompassing compassion towards all beings. 13. You must possess control of the senses, a peaceful demeanor, and a spirit of renunciation. 14. Be always on the alert against the four sins which the tongue is prone to commit. They are speaking falsehood, speaking ill of others, backbiting, and talking too much. To ensure that as far as possible, you never cross your limits in these tendencies is the best way.
So those are the tenets that Bhagwan has given us today to discuss. I think the first one is the sweetest. Among all forms of love, man's first endeavor should be to love the Lord the most. I think, in fact, if you look at our educational institutions, if you look at our school, be it the primary school or the higher secondary school, I feel this is the greatest blessing that any student consciously, unconsciously receives once you step into the portals of Sri Satya Sai Educational Institutions. It becomes settled in your mind that love for God is paramount. Love for God is the greatest adventure. Love for God surpasses everything, isn't it? In fact, here Swami is saying man's first endeavor should be to love the Lord the most, which means this is something that should start very early in one's life. This should be the first endeavor of man. Generally, what we see in the world, and this is the transformation that comes when you have the avatar taking a human form and capturing the minds and hearts of not just people who are spiritual seekers, but anyone. Capturing the hearts of little ones to intellectuals, to youngsters, to those who are spiritually inclined. I don't think if there would have been such a vibrant Balvikas movement if Bhagwan's avatar did not happen. None of us in our teens, none of us when we are in primary school would have, you know, so diligently learnt these beat shlokas or pined to be with Swami, pined to have that one drop of love from Bhagwan. If the avatar had not come, it's not that only when the avatar comes this happens, but when avatar comes, this process acquires a completely new force. The acceleration of this happens at an amazing frequency, I would feel.
Yeah, just add to your point. I remember my first day in the hostel, I had come for MBA. And two things which really hit me, like just to add to you, two beautiful quotations are there on the hostel when you enter. One is, I think it's very, we have heard this many times, but it's very apt to repeat them here. One is, each lives for the other and all live for God. So that's in essence what the fourth point says.
Yes.
Second thing which actually gives you a hint how to inculcate that is, again, Swami's own words for the dictums of the hostel, how the hostel should run. As again, very profound what Swami says. Swami says the medium of instruction is discipline. The first, second and third language in this hostel is love, service and sadhana.
Yes.
So like it's so profound to understand that. Yeah, it includes all these things. And when you told, I just went back to the day when I think Swami had visited hostel, and I was very lucky in my 2 years of stays, I was in that second year, and then I remember one of our hostel teachers, he had given us a very small sweet talk. In that he started by saying, and Swami was very happy about it, he told, see, God is omnipresent, and omnipresence is sweet, because you know God is there. But the presence is sweeter. And when you look at Swami, like, Swami gave a beautiful smile. Yeah, correct. I'm there. Presence is sweeter. We know God
is omnipresent, but his presence is sweeter.
Omnipresence is sweet. Yeah, we know. Yes. God is everywhere. He's going to help me. He is above me, beyond, below me, around me, everything.
Yes.
But his presence, and Swami was sitting in front of him. Presence is sweeter. I remember Swami had a very beautiful smile on his face when he told this. So I just recalling what you told.
Wow.
And then just coming back to the love, the second part of it. Yeah, you have anything to add in this?
No, I'm just enjoying it.
Like it gives a flurry of emotions to you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, you know, statement of Swami. Thank you again for having me. And actually, what you said just now, it just, you know, gives you such a beautiful picture in your mind. And what a nice way to put it, you know. I remember, you know, when I was doing this initiative of educations around the world, Swami had, insisted on certain things, how value education should be understood and promoted. So, today the world is talking about values in a very big way. It has become a buzzword for a long time. So, the whole idea is the value education leads to character building. Okay, so we understand it in a simple way that the whole education must lead to character. And for that you need values. So Swami said that is very important. But then he made a very beautiful statement to me. He said, values cannot be taught without God.
Okay.
Yes.
So you cannot teach values or you cannot imbibe values without the presence of God. So you must introduce God to children. And in my little experience I realized that even if I can't give, you know, I can't boast to give character to children, I cannot boast to give education to anybody. If we as a parent, as a teacher, as a community heads or elders, if we can introduce God to children and they understand that God is their companion, their friend, I think we have done our service. That's what Swami was hinting at so beautifully. He said, without God, you cannot teach anything.
Okay, morality without spirituality has no basis.
Morality without spirituality has no basis.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the reason I remembered this is, you know, I have come across so many organizations which are into self-development, you know. People spend lots of money to attend these seminars and workshops. And these organizations want to keep it quote-unquote secular. They don't want to talk about God. They don't want to talk about divinity. But they want to ensure that they create individuals who are full of integrity.
And moral values, yes.
And moral values. And somehow I always felt that, you know, perhaps someone will go through that session for 2 hours and, you know, come out of it thinking, yeah, I will follow, walk on the path of truth. But the moment there is one instance where he falls or there is a slip, he will have nothing to hold on to, you know, and he'll go back to his old ways because it is without a foundation. And the foundation that Bhagwan has always been saying is this love for God.
Love for God.
Love for God. Without that, you cannot build the mansion of spirituality.
See, like people say, you know, that everybody is good only as long as they are washed. Mm-hmm. The real goodness is when you are alone.
Yes. Yes.
How many people can be?
Yes.
This element of God does exactly that. Hmm. He does not leave you alone at all. So the moment you get into that thought of God, then you realize that you are never alone.
Never alone.
You are forced to be good. Otherwise, all of us can be criminals if we know nobody is watching us.
Even that forced to be good, it is born out of love and not fear.
That is the next step.
Exactly.
That is the next step. First, you have to have kind of fear. Like Swami says, no, fear is good.
When bhaya and bhakti, bhaya and bhakti both are needed.
Yeah.
But yes, but I think from childhood, you know, you need to inculcate both. Because a child, you have to use both these methods to discipline the child.
No, I don't know if you know in Telugu, if at home, in any home, if the boy or girl does a mischief, the mother will scold, bhayam bhakti leda. Means you don't have bhayam and bhakti. So basically that's what it's a normal word in a day-to-day parlance when we speak.
Yeah.
So basically means it's the same thing. First the bhayam should
means
come.
If you're doing bhakti. Something wrong, you have neither fear of God nor love for God. Both are missing. At least one thing you should have.
Daiva priti papa bhiti.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe coming back to what brother was telling about value education. So yeah, but it's not so much in clarity in the present times, but like I just want to bring to your attention that recently the government had made this new education policy, NEP. So one thing which they had told in this draft document is all the country in every district, at least in every district, we should have one multidimensional higher education institution, MDHEI. Mm-hmm. What is that? That institution which will have a holistic development of a student. It's like if you see what they're telling, it's like as if they're just taking out few words from what Swami has told for this university. And then they say you should have yoga, you should have self-development, you should have sports, you should have music, you should have prayers, all these things. So actually, like we had a small discussion, I remember our people, the elders were telling that whatever they're actually told is more or less being followed here in some way or other. You know our self-reliance departments. We
for
have
the past 30 years.
So right from the inception, Swami has actually inculcated deep into all of us.
Yes.
So no, when I saw that, I had a small glance about, I just went through it. So like whatever they're telling, might be they got to know Eureka, something they have realized, no. Swami has been doing this right from the beginning, from the inception of the university.
Yes.
So about this value education.
Yes.
And same, we do it day in day out. From the morning we have Suprabhatam prayers till yoga to sports till night prayer, everything whatever we do.
Yes.
And the self-reliance departments, all that whatever we have. Swami had always devised and designed these to make a student a holistic personality. Where the education is catered to the body, mind and the soul also. All aspects of a person's personality.
Yes.
See, if you look at any area of work, be it school or organization, everybody looks for certain attributes in their staff, employees or students. They all want them to be punctual. They want them to be dedicated. They want to have them sense of sacrifice for each other. They want to have team building. You know, they have million words they can come out with. Mm. And everybody is struggling to generate. And you will see them, there are in India especially, now I'm noticing when I'm back here, that there are so many trainers in the market who are trying to do team building, empowerment and all that blahs. And everybody does it, and you talk to the staff who goes through the training, they feel, we feel good about it for a month, and then the fizz goes off, and then you're back to again. Mm. So we need motivation every month.
Mm.
So why is that we need motivation so often? Mm. Why can't we be ever motivated? And then you have a scenario like Puttaparthi. I'm just using Puttaparthi as an example, but this is now extrapolated anywhere where Swami's, the presence is working.
Yes.
You find that these attributes which we are trying to motivate people by paying millions of dollars here and there is ingrained in our system.
Yes. Mm.
Here, Swami extracts devotion, discipline, dedication, sacrifice, surrender. These are the attributes which naturally gets expressed.
Yes. He inspires. He inspires all these. Yes.
He pulls it out of you so much
yes.
that you don't even think that you are showing gratitude, you are showing yeah. sacrifice. I don't tell him that, hey, you are doing something great here.
It becomes yeah.
it becomes part of
your second nature. Your
swabhav.
So here we don't need a motivational speech to be yeah. dedicated and come on time and do things.
Yes.
Because we all do it for God.
Yes.
And this is the difference which people are not able to catch.
Yes.
Yes.
That all these attributes which we are talking about are really hidden only with one word, that you target it towards God and this becomes natural. Yes. Otherwise you will keep spending millions every day, every month, training your staff to get motivated. But the motivation cannot last.
Mm.
Because all the motivation which you look at the world is not permanent. That extraction happens only when you look at God, then you find amazing sense of yeah. devotion, dedication, discipline. You can think mm-hmm. of anything. And the same thing I have personally experienced even in students. All the students who get inclined towards Godhead, even in any school for that matter, you will see the distinct difference of their behavior.
So easy to inculcate these virtues in them, right?
Very easy. And that's why it's so funny, like, you know, how do we introduce God? Mm. As you said rightly, you know, like in America, they say God bless America, but they keep God away from schools and colleges.
Mm.
So you can't talk about God in the school, but God bless America. So how can God bless you when you keep him out of the door? So here is the same scenario, you know, like how do we introduce? So that was another, churning process.
I mean, to begin with, they should stop thinking that God is just a philosophy. I mean, many people... Unfortunately, you know, they take God as a philosophy. That's what, I mean, and the more the intellect comes to play with that, and it's like there's a saying, when you're telling about the values they're trying to inculcate, they're focusing on the procedure. There's a saying that the operation was successful, but the patient was dead. So, I mean, they've done everything technically correct, but the soul has left. What's the point?
Mm.
So, the soul of all this is if you believe in God and if you have faith in God and if you love God, everything falls in place. But if you remove the very fundamental thing and everything else you do perfectly, it's of no use. It's of no, because you're trying. I mean, there has to be an external attention, external force to motivate, but if something has to be inspired, it has to come from within. And that's what, I mean, this, you know, don't catch the fish and give the person. Teach him how to fish.
Mm.
That's the saying. So if the person, if the child knows or gets into the path of bhakti, of loving God, automatically everything is taken. All the virtues comes along with that. In fact, Abhimanyu brother, you should actually share. We were talking about, you know, fear of sin. In those days, of course, when Swami used to interact with the students, one of the biggest nightmare is suppose Swami is talking to you very nicely and suddenly he stops. Okay. Or Swami suddenly puts you in a freezer, is ignoring you. A lot of introspection will go. Where did I go wrong and all that? And it's not that God hates or gets angry, but he's molding you. It's for your own good. So the whole effort was how to win his love. And the greatest fear was to lose that love and attention. So, I mean, it applies even with the omnipresence reality even now. Because when you are in connect, your life, you're happy from inside. Okay. If you look at the small babies, you know, you wonder why they're smiling. You know, they're happy because they're in that state. But the moment we do something and something bothers our conscience, the disconnect takes place. And the moment the disconnect takes place, the whole peace is gone. So, I mean, if you can go back and go back to your days in the 80s and 90s, when these type of situations were very, I mean, obvious, with Swami's interaction with some of the students you would have witnessed or with your own experience, where the fear of losing that connect, the fear of losing that, because it is, when you are in that bliss, no? When you are bliss of the connection, when you are in tune, when you are in harmony, if I were to say, you are so happy, like everything is smooth, everything just, you know, you feel so happy. But
you're opening the floodgates.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, that is what it is. Not that I'll be punished. No, no. The greatest punishment will be to, like, suppose somebody switch off the light, no? You're in darkness. So you're afraid that light should not go, right?
See, I'll just tell you a small story about it.
Please.
You know, in those days, the problem was not what you speak. The problem was what you think. Because even when you're coming to Mandir or you're sleeping in the hostel or you're talking to somebody, what you're thinking, you get caught in the portico. So portico used to be
literally.
Somebody will come say, Emra, what were you talking? What were you thinking? Why did you look here and there? So the consciousness level was so much that we used to walk also. He told us how to walk. Because if you look around and you look at a poster and a thought comes to your head, you are scared that you shouldn't get, you know, scolded in the mandir. So that was a kind of a position. And I'll give you a physical illustration of it. In those days, Swami used to give most of us a locket. You must have seen that silver chain and locket.
Mm-hmm.
In a pendant with an Omkar at the back.
Yes.
And a Swami's embossed picture in the front. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That was his first standard gift to all of us. Most of us got it. But in those days, it was like we were students, you know, to get anything from Swami was very exciting. That, hey, I got it. But the trouble happened very soon. Then we realized that it's not just a gift, but it's a pain. Why? Because it happened like that Swami was sitting one day and he looked at somebody's locket and it was black. So he said, bad thought. So now the boy is trying to explain. He must be a science student. He says, Swami, it is silver, so when it reacts with my sweat, it gets black.
Oxidized in there.
Oxidized. See, he is trying to give an explanation to Swami. Swami said, Buddhara, Buddhu, this is my silver. Only because of your bad thought, it gets spoiled. And if it is only oxidation, then you put it, you clean with the vibhuti water, it will get white again. Vibhuti water will clean it. Otherwise, it's a bad thought. You can't imagine all of us were hiding our lockets afterwards. Oh God, we're looking at it like, you know, is it white or black now? So every night we could see in the hostel, everybody is like polishing their, trying to see that I'm not having bad thought. And mine was still safe. It was bright, beautifully white. So I was very happy. Happy in the sense, you know, you are, actually, you don't get happy also. You are like, now, thank God it is white. Just like that. So one day, I saw a black dot on the Om side. You won't believe it. Today, I can laugh and confess it with you all. For almost 3-4 days, I lost my sleep. Because I said, man, which bad thought is coming to me? Now, suppose this dot increases, then what I'll do? I have tried all the vibhuti possible, all the scrubbing possible. That dot, little dot, did not go. And it was like a, not too big a dot, but it was a dot.
Visible.
Invisible. So I'm scared. You won't believe, I didn't even sit in the front for those few days because I was so scared. That in case Swami looks at it, he would not tell me anything. He did not tell me anything, but that fear, you know, that Swami, have I done a mistake? What thought has come to me? Because he said, you're thinking. And after a few days, that dot disappeared. That relieved me. I can't tell you.
Wow.
So this, that, you know, thought.
Beautiful.
You know, Swami used to give watches.
Yes.
And you know the story of acronym of WASH, right? WASH, yes. Word and
word,
all.
Action.
Word, action, heart, character, thought. And thought. So Swami had, he gave the discourse beautifully, explained to all of us. And then he used to give watches also, many boys. Some boys were very smart, they would ask more watches. And I don't know why, Swami would give them. So each boy, like one or two, one of my classmates had at least 3-4 watches.
In the same session, and Swami is giving.
No. After 1 month, Swami, what do you want? Watch.
Watch.
Swami give watch. After 1 month, again, watch, Swami. So he'll keep getting watches. I said, why do you need so many, man? Yeah. And you keep asking. He said, I like it. Now what can you say?
Mm-hmm.
And Swami is a giver, so fair, no problem. So it so happened, one day his watch stopped. And he was so cool about that watch stopping. That he said, ah, battery must be over, man. It's already 8-9 months. I always wear it. So I told him, boss, wait. Swami has been telling, watch your word and all that. Don't change. Within 1 year, Swami's watch should not stop. As a friend, I told him. But he was in S, because Swami was talking to him and he was, you know, that form boy kind of a definition in those days. So he was fine. And one of his brothers, I think, is going to Bangalore. So he gave him the battery number and all that. He said, go and buy it for me. The same evening, we were sitting in the portico. Another brother of ours here, his watch also had stopped. Swami came to him. And now the scenario in the portico is, we are on the middle portico, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that brother whose watch had stopped, he was sitting in front of me. I am sitting kind of behind him. And this fellow is also sitting there only. So we are kind of in a triangular shape sitting there. So we all can listen to Swami easily. And I don't know where he's sitting. We never bothered, but it happened that we were there. This boy, what he did, his watch had stopped. He had gone to city, shown to a watchmaker, asked him to fix it. The watchmaker opened the watch. He checked. The watch was perfectly running condition. Battery was okay. He said, this watch is as good as anything. I don't know why it's not working. So watchmaker gave up. He said, I don't know why it's not working, but it's good. But he had again worn and come to Darshan and sat. So Swami came very beautifully and stood in front of him. And in a very casual way, he looked at him and said, hey, a time, Intra?
What is time? Mm-hmm.
What is time? Now the poor fellow's watch has stopped. So he can't say, but he's pretending to, like, you know, look at the time. But he can't tell the time. He's making a guess kind of scenario, but he was, like, you can see the color changing. Then Swami's face suddenly serious and he said, what do you think? You can show to any watchmaker and he can fix this watch? Nobody can fix this watch. So he started crying and Swami said, this is because bad thoughts. Watch your watch. Because you didn't, the watch has stopped because of that, not because of technical reasons. Now imagine that other brother whose watch had stopped. He was like, oh God.
He was watching.
Swami should not watch me now. I can't tell you. You know, that was a time when we used to be, that was our level of, you know, like attention, that it was very difficult. If you're really focused with Swami, then it becomes, now you're conscious of your thought, you're conscious of your eyes, you're conscious of everything. Because that is what you're asking me.
Beautiful. Mm. It's like, you know, you're antaryami, you're seeing outside.
The talks.
Nothing is...
That is scary, in a way. If you ask me frankly, it is really scary. Today I'm laughing with you, but trust me, in those days, we used to be like, literally scared, like, what will Swami say now?
So always in that alertness, 100% alertness.
You have to be always alert.
That's what they say, the price of spirituality is alertness.
Yes.
You have to be always alert.
Because he was reacting so fast.
I think that amazing. is the greatest blessing of having the avatar.
Avatar.
Mm.
You can do your experiments and see the results right in front of you.
Straight away. And like, you know, one of the gurus of Dattatreya was the ocean. I think it was Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti. He goes near the ocean and he sees that small piece of bark, you know, just the wave takes pushes it back on the shore. So he first gets upset. Why that small bark of a tree, it cannot accommodate. Ocean is so vast. But then later the insight dawns that even that small, if it starts allowing inside, there's no end to it. Everything will start coming. So even though ocean, look at the size and volume of the ocean, but it doesn't even allow a small speck of impurity to enter. Same thing, our mind, Manosagara. Even as once we start allowing, even a small, all the cousins and all the friends will start entering. So, I mean, the thing is to check it in the beginning itself. Now, for most of us, I mean, we are somewhere in the middle. So that's where the Premavahini, after the Kulwanthal session, I was really inspired. I thought, I went to Premavahini, first chapter. What really touched me, though I have read it earlier, but of course, when I read 10 years back, the maturity level and thinking was different. Yes. Now, when I saw the same chapter, one thing very beautifully Swami says in the first chapter itself is the beauty of the of being a human being is nobody is incorrigible. At whatever level you might be, you can still pick yourself up and start. The whole scriptures and the whole Ramayana, Bhagavata is all about character molding. It's all about character. If you remember Jesus, if you remember Buddha, it's because of their character. And whoever you are, at whatever stage of life you are, however, whatever you would have done, it is never late. You can always pick yourself up and then start fresh. And that is a beauty, that is a hope that all the scriptures give. And once you have the aspiration of winning His love, then it is, of course, going up and up. There's no risk of falling.
In fact, when brother, you were mentioning that you got so concerned about that black dot on your pendant and it disappeared with time, that is so fantastic. I was reminded of a question-answer session that Bhagwan allowed in the Sai Kulwanth Hall in 1998, November 24th. I think it was a conference of the chairpersons of overseas organizations. And one of them asked this question, Swami, what should we do to get rid of the consequences of our actions, of our karma? And Swami says that if you develop love for the divine, love God wholeheartedly, it has the power to nullify the effects of your karma. What greater reward do we want from practicing this principle? I mean, here yours was a live example where whatever little karma possibly had that black mark, it was just your sincere pining for Lord. It was your sincere love which was so overwhelming that that just melted away. And I think we don't need any other greater motivation if you're looking for a reward. Though love should not be practiced seeking for a reward. In fact, Bhagwan also narrates the story of Dharmaja and Draupadi. So wherein, when they are roaming in the Himalayas during the exile, when they are in the forests, and Draupadi says that, why is it that we are going through so much? We are devoted to Lord, we are devoted to Krishna. At the same time, you know, we are...
Why would people have to suffer?
Exactly. I mean, why are we in the villages? Why are we in the forest? Why are we walking like this? Why are we leading such a life full of strife? And that is where Dharmaja says that when we love God, we love God because that because does not arise. You don't love God because.
There's no reason.
You love God because you love God.
Should sahajam.
Yes. So you should not even have this thought that I love God, but why is this happening to me?
Because
there's no correlation. Basically, you should just love God because you should love God. That's it. So don't even think like that.
That is absolute surrender, acceptance.
Exactly.
That's what.
So, yes, I mean, as I say, love is own reward that is always there. But Swami says, if you really love wholeheartedly, that is the panacea for all your karma, that is the panacea for all your diseases, that is the solution for all your worldly problems. This is definitely there. Swami says, but whether this happens or not, you should continue to love wholeheartedly. But this will anyway happen, because that is the power of love. And the most beautiful, important thing that Swami is telling here is, that should be our first endeavor. And I think that is what is ingrained in Bharatiya culture. That is what is so strongly enunciated in our culture, our traditions in India. You know, as soon as the child is born, you have all these rituals. Every ritual is connected to the divine. And the moment the child begins to think, the moment the child comes to an age where he is able to absorb things from the outside world, you do open enum. You put the sacred thread on him and say, hello, your connect is only with the divine. This is the bond. All the other connections will come and go, but this is the bond that you should focus on. And that's what I'm saying, among all forms of love, man's first endeavor should be to love the Lord. And Swami says, love the Lord the most. That is also so important.
Can we dwell on what is loving God in the sense, love, give yourself completely. But when we say loving God, loving divinity, in day-to-day practice, in everyday practice,
good question.
How do you, one hint. Everybody's understanding of love might be different.
One hint can be like, as you told about the university, the next beautiful edifice is the hospital.
Yes.
So one, if you remember, if you enter the hospital, the magnificent dome we have, and next to the dome, I think, there's a beautiful photo of Swami, and there's a big, very big words Swami has made them put it there. Paropakarartham idam shariram. So,
yes.
I think...
Which is the meaning is?
Means...
This body is
only for serving.
Others. Yes.
And everyone. If you just see, actually this is just a small part of the actual shloka, which is, they say that the nature is nothing but God's reflection. So, this actually is taken from that, where it says that paropakaraya phalanti vrukshaha paropakaraya vahanti nadyaha. Paropkaraya duhanti gavaha paropkarartham idam shariram. Swami always quotes this. Means, for others only, the fruit bearing trees bear fruits, for others only the rivers flow, and for others only the cow gives the milk. In the same way, for others only is this, to serve others only is this body. So actually, I feel it is more like a give and take. You love God, how to love God, you serve. When you start serving, the love increases. It's like a helix. The one might be complements the other, and automatically you keep going higher and higher. So I feel the most important pillar of what Swami's teachings, if you see, to us also, whenever he used to speak to us also. So it's always service. Do something.
Yes.
First, at least start with doing something for others, and then start realizing that actually you're doing yourself, for yourself. You're serving yourself only. Or second stage is probably you say that I'm serving Lord in God, or Swami in this. And probably you understand that finally you are actually serving yourself. You are actually making yourself better. So I feel, if you actually say loving God, it becomes a very abstract thing. Okay, loving God means what? What should I do? So probably the most tangible thing where you can actually feel something happening and you feel that something is actually changing me is probably the service, which might be you. Service means something which you do for others. The other in this case.
Yes.
And probably that will actually give you that joy. And probably that joy only will lead you to...
Helping
if others.
If you have that helping nature.
Because otherwise, if you just say love, it's like an abstract thing.
Like,
okay, loving God means what should I do?
Somebody's definition means I do morning prayer, that's it. I mean, that's my love to God. And, you know...
Probably that's correct.
I'm not saying it's not.
It's not wrong, but
to limit...
What is God?
Yeah, we should go to the even more difficult question.
Because if you say, I, Swami, I'm serving you, he said, I don't need your service.
Mm. Yeah.
He always says that to you, right? Yes. I don't need anything from
you
guys.
It's like taking Ganga water and putting back
Ganga. So what is God? Who are we serving? Why should we serve? And who's God? What is God that needs service?
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm just throwing a thought at
you. Yeah, I mean, no, the thing is, one of the fundamental aim of spirituality is to realize that all this is one. To begin with service, when Swami says, when a nail pricks your leg, spontaneously your hand goes and removes that thing. So when you see somebody suffering, you feel that hurt in your heart. Oh, why is that coming? Though physically you're not connected.
No, if it is not coming, if you don't feel it, means there is something wrong. Please develop the sensitivity to actually feel it.
Yes, yes.
Might be the service will do that.
Then you're feeling off otherwise. Yeah.
That is, I mean, that is what Swami says, Jesus, after his early years in Nazareth, after his father passed away, Jesus then went into penance, and for 40 days he was praying to the Lord. And Swami said, Jesus prayed that bless me with that capacity to love all equally.
Yeah.
And bless me with that strength to handle any amount of indignity, prosecution with fortitude.
He asked for it.
He asked for that. So, one of the principal tenets of the goal of spirituality is that oneness.
Yeah.
When Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa was suffering and he was not able to eat, and Swami Vivekananda comes and tells Master, why didn't you ask the mother? And Ramakrishna Paramahansa says that, yes, I went and I asked the mother. And the mother said, when you are eating through so many mouths, what difference does it make if you don't eat through this particular mouth?
Mm.
So that is the oneness, which is the goal of love.
All the spiritual endeavors.
That is the goal of love.
Goal.
That is the goal of all spiritual endeavors, that oneness.
See, I like it very much. And that explains the concept of, you know, why we need God.
Yes.
If you really look at it, we don't know how to love. We need surrender, but we don't know how to surrender. If I surrender to you, I'm always worried you should not misuse me.
Mm.
If I am disciplined to you, I'm dedicated to you, I'm not sure whether you will respect my dedication and I'll be fructified, you know.
Mm.
So the challenge of human being is that we have lost our own self-esteem and that realization, what is my real capability? So God in his magnanimity takes a form and allows us to experience these things. God is not a sadist who says, come and pray me only, then I'll bless you. There's nothing to bless because we are all one. But he takes a form in his magnanimity so that we can experience surrender, sacrifice, love, emotions. And once I do that with that form, or that symbol of God, and that symbol then leads me back to myself only, when I start realizing that actually this whole thing was happening within me. And then I realize that oneness which you just mentioned. Otherwise, oneness is a very difficult concept even to conceptualize.
Yes.
But when Swami does that, the moment I help, say XYZ, here Swami comes and says, good boy, today you have helped me. I feed a dog and Swami says my stomach is full. So then you suddenly start realizing that whatever I do in my life is actually going to Swami. And then he says, what is for me here? Mm. If you are happy, then you are happy. I eat your ananda. And then we realize that actually it's my benefit and my oneness. So the moment I start feeling one, I start feeling God. So God, I find, is a very beautiful a concept, you can call it, phenomena you can call it, which is so magnanimous, so graceful, that it manifests just for ourselves to realize who we are.
So I think to put it, and that's a very, very powerful idea, because I think you go to any spiritual organization, the goal is always self-realization.
Hmm.
And God is only a medium, a process that is needed for you to reach that goal of self-realization. Isn't it?
Yes.
because God realization and self realization is ultimately the same.
Yeah.
But you know, the way you put it, and I think that is very powerful. I think when you have God as a different entity, as a symbol, as a deity, as a form, as a name, then you are using that entity, you are using that method for you to realize your own self. I think that's what happens, you know.
Actually, when I looked at Darshan also, no, I used to think always that why is it that when Swami used to come and stand in front of people, we start crying. There's no reason we start laughing.
Yes.
Swami looks at you and we are grinning. He will say any word and we will start laughing. He will look somewhere and we start crying. And I'm sure all of us have seen millions of people who cry and they don't know, why am I crying? I don't know. Tears are not stopping.
Yes.
And I've always been thinking about it, like why it happens to people. And what I could understand in my own understanding was that he's like a mirror.
Yes.
You know, he, when you face him, you are actually looking at your inner core of yours. And that core makes you realize naked in front of everything. And you realize, oh my God, this is what I am. And that makes you lose yourself. That's why we lose everything in front of Swami. Because he just stands like a mirror. He does nothing. He just stands and we are exposed. But the good part is we are only exposed to ourselves. Others are not seeing that. But that is what he does. That's what the God element, the factor does. That's why Swami used to say, you know, that don't get attached to my body, but it's not possible not to get attached. But at the same time, I have realized now, I can say that yes, I am attached to his body, his form, not to body, I would say, the form, but that attachment is not possessive. That attachment is no longer, I'm sure all of us, we don't feel possessed about it, like I want to possess that form. We are attached to that form, that beauty, but that attachment is not...
But that attachment has ensured that it leads to greater detachment of the world.
It's naturally happening, right?
So that is...
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
So we are actually detached from everything.
Yes.
And we don't even hold him also. My point was that I thought that after Swami has gone physically, I was thinking like Puttaparthi will be... I can't come here. I can't stay. But I find somehow this home is still home. It has got similar energy. It's got such a... I sit in the bhajan. It feels the same. It is so beautiful. So, we are attached to his form, but we are still not attached to his form. We kind of own it now. Every one of us feel that he is mine, permanently mine.
Yeah.
There is nothing like avoidance or cold storage now. You know,
exactly.
We all have become that state that we literally live in God in that format. So, isn't it beautiful?
One challenge which Swami has told in this path of striving to realize his oneness is the body consciousness.
Yeah.
And Swami gives a very beautiful example. Swami says that if suppose you're standing next to a water body and your reflection is on the water body, you're not looking at the reflection and a stone falls at that reflection of yours, you don't react to it because you're you're not even looking at the reflection. You're looking somewhere, a stone comes and falls on that reflection, the whole reflection moves, but you don't because you're not linked with it. But suppose somebody comes and points his finger towards your reflection, abuses it, throws a stone, no, then you get angry. Okay. So in the previous situation, when the same stone fell and the whole reflection moved, you are like oblivious to it, you are not even reacting. But somebody comes and points a finger to that reflection and throws a stone, you react vehemently. It's because you are attaching yourself to that.
Yes.
And Swami says that you are not that actually.
Yes.
See, in one scenario, the stone fell, you didn't react. Second scenario, the stone fell, you are reacting so much. So all this body association is this is Maya. Swami says this is Maya. This is the Maya of life. So you have to realize that all that is everybody that you are interacting with, no, is just a reflection. Okay. Reflection of the Supreme Self. And that is what you have to strive. And the lesser important in the further points as you will go, it says you should have sense control. Lesser dominance of the senses is there in your life, the lesser will be the grip of that body consciousness. And the more you run behind senses, you'll be more taking yourself away from the atmic bliss. That's why one who is striving to realize that oneness, one who is striving to realize that oneness with the God, he should deliberately, consciously reduce his indulgences with the world of senses. It is inevitable. The more you identify, the more you entertain, the lesser, the more you're going away from your true self of that oneness. And if you, I was just, see all the points I was noting down. The first few points, Swami is talking about love, love, love.
Yes.
Okay, I mean, first 4 points is love.
Yes.
Then fifth point is love. Again, fifth also is love. Then sixth, he talks about sense control and atmic bliss.
Yes.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It's only truth.
Truth.
Yes. Then, of course, 12th, Swami talks about self-sacrifice, yes. Then renunciation. And Swami talks about the force in the last. So I was just seeing what are the qualities of love and truth stands out.
Yes.
Which again is a form of God, which is changeless. You know, so the more you identify, the more you identify your identity with these quality, the lesser is the influences of the world.
Yes.
The more you go towards them, you will go away from the love and truth.
Absolutely.
So that is.
Beautiful.
The best way, as someone told me once, asked me this question. In fact, that you know, I have these businesses to run, and you know, I have so many responsibilities. I mean, how do I get detached? I mean, how is detachment possible? You know, and I was reminded of what Bhagwan used to say, that if you try to detach yourself from the world, that is very difficult. What you should try to do is attach yourself more to God. That's all.
Mm.
And automatically this will happen in its own course.
Yeah. That example is there, no?
Yes.
That the coconut tree is there, and the shadow of the coconut tree is there.
Yes.
So if you try to grab the shadow of the coconut tree, you'll not get the real coconut. But if you actually climb the coconut tree and you hold the coconut, your shadow also will be shown that you're holding.
Yeah.
So if when you take the path, though it is difficult, Swami says, you have to climb up, you have to put effort.
Yes.
But even the world and the spirituality both are taken care of.
Yes, yeah. Wow.
Swami's similes are such that it goes straight into your heart.
Yes.
You know, there is no ambiguity left there.
As refreshing as the coconut water.
So beautiful.
Wow. Well, I think we actually spent a lot of time today discussing the fourth point alone. There is so much more to... I think, you know, any number of sessions are not enough to talk about...
Otherwise, can you give meaning to life if you don't love God? What is the meaning of life then?
Yeah. So, Swami says, you know, there is no point. You might have any number of talents you want. You might have any number of scholastic achievements. You might have been a genius in metaphysics and all that.
Mm.
But still, your life will be meaningless and empty if you don't have that love for God.
Operation was successful, patient was dead.
Yes.
See, unfortunately, this fact, most of the people realize at the fag end of their lives.
Exactly.
Or end of the life.
End of the
last
life.
Day before leaving.
And I think that is why I feel this fourth point is very important, where Swami says, man's first endeavor should be to love the Lord and love the Lord the most.
The most, yes.
I think that is also to be bold and underline. You can not just love the Lord, not just love the Lord, love the Lord first in, do that first thing in your life, but also do it the best way possible and love the maximum.
You know, being a convocation time, I remember there was some kind of a discussion once, and Swami had said, I want my boys, I'm sure he was referring to as a student body and all that, he said, to go out in the world as self-realized soul. And then take up different roles.
Hmm.
Get married, have businesses. So that thought itself was mind-boggling at that time. I just heard it and I, like, you know, it was as if you hear a million things. But later on it just grew on me that, imagine, that Sanatak Kriya, which they say convocation, was actually given to people who are already self-realized. So in Swami's college, I thought, like, that is the time when you are realized, you already know, that you are God, at least conceptually.
Hmm.
You know your life purpose. You know that love of God is priority.
Yes.
You know that you have to walk the path of truth. See, these are all given once you are graduated.
Yes.
So your graduation certificate represents that, yes, this person is realized.
All the foundations and seeds have been
done.
I mean, properly sown.
So now you go to the world and do whatever you want.
Do what you want.
So you can get
into... Actually, whatever brother is telling, the convocation oath actually mentions all these things.
Yes.
Whatever our Vice Chancellor gives all of us, that oath of convocation, before you get into the graduation. The same thing which Swami has, I'm sure Swami would have designed the whole thing.
Yes.
So actually it talks about all these things. Before you leave, all these things should be there, then only you leave.
So is it, you know, when you hear it, it's all Vedic.
Absolutely.
And that is why I think when he used to come for the pledge, and I'm sure world must have heard it, our pledge is also in Sanskrit. That is our, you know, that Shikshavalli.
Yes.
Vedamanuchya Charyonte.
Yes.
See, that itself says, Satyam Vada Dharmam Charam.
Yes.
See, we are straight away going there.
Yes, yes.
So that shows that expectation of Bhagavan was not that you have self-realization at the end of life.
Yes. Yes.
His expectation was that you should be self-realized, then you go and live.
Then you start your life.
Then you start your life. And he joked one day, he said that what is the point of winning a lottery and you die? You know? So you are not enjoying it.
Not enjoying it.
So you have to win it. Then
celebrate life.
Then celebrate life.
So on a lighter note, just playing with the word, you know, convo means you realize wo kon hai.
Convo.
So on the day of convo, you know. At least by then you know.
Wow, beautiful.
Imagine, eh? That's the expectation of Swami. Yeah. I think this should be told to all the students, you know, passing
out. Really beautiful.
Hey,
yeah.
This is your real message.
Get relation and then go.
Then go out in the world.
There's a song also, you know, kon hai wo, kon hai wo.
Wow, beautiful. Well, I think time is running out, so we will have to draw the curtains. Thank you so much, brothers.
Thank you, brother, for having us. It's a pleasure.
Sairam.
Sairam. So, dear listeners, yes, we will continue. We've just scratched the surface of this topic. And you will agree, we will never be able to do full justice. But this is just one way of spending our time contemplating on his teachings, and there are a million ways that this can be done, and this is just one of the 100 ways that we are doing at Radio Sai, and wherever you are, with your own group of people, with your own Sai brothers and friends and satsang, you can engage in this session to rejuvenate yourself with those precious armors of life, which will ensure that you are protected and you are always in bliss. So with prayers to Bhagavan and offering of gratitude to him for allowing this session, we bring this session to a close. If you have any queries, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Thank you so much. Sanam.